Watch him throw the ball, we gon' pick it up. You gon' let him hit the holder, you gon' cut it off. You gon' play through fourth and long, or you gon' punt it off. Your defenders, heavy hitters, put your pads in. Don't be looking for the ref to throw no flags in. Keep the helmet on, keep the cleats tight. You the type to want to win by any means, right? You should look alive, this is Trap or Dive.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Yep, sir. Yep.
Welcome back to another episode of the Trap or Dive podcast, provided to you by 214 Media. I'm your host, Marty Maul, Coach Maul, Hen Dog Maul, all that good stuff, man. Let me go ahead and get the fellas. Let me get AJ in this thing right quick. Boom. I'm here with AJ and my boy Cole tonight. Dre, I believe, is on the way. Before we check in with the fellas, let's get the administrative items out of the way. And whichever way you are listening or watching, always make sure to rate, review, or like the show. If you are new to the Trap or Dive podcast, make sure you are following on Twitch or subscribing on YouTube. If you are not following or subscribed, it does help the show and grow and all that stuff. It is appreciated. For those who are on Twitter, I had to help my boy out last week. StreamYard doesn't I don't see your comments or anything if you're typing and stuff like that on Twitter. So I will never see your comments on that. So I always try to tell you all to make that transition to the YouTube channel or the Twitch channel so we can all always be a part of the show and stuff like that. So always try to do that. And then lastly, Maya Shaka. The Maya Shaka interview is out on all Trap or Dive platforms. Again, Maya, if you don't know, was the first black woman to be a full-time NFL official. And it was a great interview. Listen, I know it's not the lane that we all talk about on this channel, but it's an important lane. It was a great conversation. Show Maya some love and just get to know her as an individual and obviously what she got going on for the rest of her career, man. She got big things going on, so I'm very happy and was excited to speak to her. So the fellas are all in. Everybody's in here. AJ, Dre, Cole, fellas, how y'all feeling?
Good, man. Glad to be back.
Yep, I appreciate the invite. It's pretty cool. So, see what's going to go down.
AJ, how you feeling? If he can hear us, I don't know if he can hear us.
Yeah, AJ got technical difficulties right now.
He on the
probably was talking too much shit about Ron Rivera and him. Ron got his ass banned. Ron,
look at this get man, his ass. Oh my goodness! All right, so let's go ahead and get into this.
Yeah, I couldn't get the audio in my AirPods, man.
Oh, there we go. There we go. How you feeling? You good?
I was over here having a Teddy Riley moment.
Hey, so on the show agenda today, we have a few things we're going to talk about. Let's get through the rundown right quick. Now, we always ask the angle of, you know, should Washington re-sign Terry? But I also think that, and AJ, you, I thought of you when I asked this question because you said this a few times throughout the course of this offseason. While we want, and everybody will want Washington to, you know, be aggressive in their re-sign attempts, should Terry, think about a different perspective, should Terry re-sign before camp? Before training camp, we're going to dive into that. The second thing is the most confident and least confident individuals, whether it's player, coach, or position group, who are those individuals heading into training camp that we are confident in or not so confident in? Hot seats, man. Hot seats. Rivera, Turner, JDR, maybe even the front office. I know AJ has some ideas on that one. We're going to rate the level of hot seats as we get into training camp, and the season is officially around the corner for us. We're going to rate it the level of hot seats for each three. Obviously, year three is a pivotal year, so we're going to try and get down to the bottom of that. Who has more to prove this upcoming season for Washington, the defense or Carson Wentz? And then lastly, a couple off-topic things, but or off-commander-centered things, I guess. And RG3 spoke on some things and about Washington comparing this season to another year. We're going to get into that. And then lastly, some Deshaun Watson stuff. We'll try to fit that in at the tail end of this discussion. So here we go. Let's get into it, man. Terry McLaurin obviously is a big topic for us, for everybody. This time around, obviously he's in need of a deal. He is into his last season his last contractual season with the Washington Commanders. And up until this point, no deal, and has been no Terry for mandatory portions of the offseason. Fellas, again, we'll start it off with whoever wants to take the first stab at this one. You could go right ahead. We know Washington fans want Terry. We know, or we believe, that the Commanders want Terry. And want to re-sign him at all costs. We want to believe that, but should Terry re-sign throughout this portion of the offseason or even before training camp? What are your all thoughts on that one? Anybody wants to kick this off, you got the floor.
I mean, I guess I'll start off. I think if I'm Terry, the thing that you want is you want that financial security, but at the same token, you really don't know the future of the quarterback that you'll be playing with. That's where it's a bit difficult.
Hold on. AJ, you got some grills, bro? You got some
I was just noticing, damn.
AJ, I was about to say, I see some pearly whites. Yeah. Yeah, I seen them jokes, boy. Hell yeah. That's what's up, bro. Yeah, it's clean, man. Go ahead. I get back to I had to pause before you even got started, dog.
But yeah, man. So it's with Terry, man. He's in a peculiar situation. I think he definitely wants to be here. That's why he held out of minicamp, or he would have been a bit more boisterous and as far as like telling people, hey, you know, I really would like to play somewhere else. I just think that the main reason why he wasn't at minicamp and may not be at training camp is because the fact that they're so far apart in numbers. I think Washington has been doing everything on a bargain. Some of those things they've gotten away with, but their own players, everything has been on a bargain. The only people that have been overpaid in some degree have been certain free agents like the William Jacksons, the Curtis Samuels, but their own guys in particular, they have not done anything that has shown you under the Ron Rivera tenure that they want to retain guys, from Trent Williams to, I mean, you could look at the Quinn Dunbar thing a little bit differently, but you could have kept them. You can look at,
what about John Adrian Allen, AJ?
Adrian Peterson.
Chase
Williams. But yeah, if we focus on Jonathan Allen, I don't know if y'all remember, but I was going to have Jonathan Allen's agent come on the show the day that he signed his extension and explained to the fan base that they took a cheaper deal. They took a bargain deal. Him getting $18 million a year was a bargain deal when Leonard Williams was getting 21. And he could have got 20 or 21 at that time frame when he signed the extension last year. But that was a bargain deal. And that was his agent and Jonathan Allen kind of being on the same page. Like, hey, I want to stay here. I want to build something. I don't want to have to go learn a new playbook or be under a new regime. You know, I'll just take the $18 million versus me trying to force my way to get 21. And that's what is also hurting Terry McLaurin in this negotiation process, because they had Jonathan Allen, who's, I guess you could say, under the same boat as Terry, being a leader on and off the field, good person in the community, one of our key players, somebody that we want to build around. But that motherfucker took he took $3 million less than what he really should have. So they're really trying to get Terry to close in on doing this DJ Moore type of deal versus the AJ Brown, when statistically Terry McLaurin and AJ Brown numbers are pretty much the same.
Yep.
And on top of that, the only major difference is their age, but they're both in situations where they didn't really have the greatest quarterbacks and put up these high stats. And rightfully so, if I'm Terry McLaurin, I'm not playing for anything less than 25.
Yeah.
So it's up to Ron and company to stop going back and forth with the players so much and really just pay the guy. But there might be belief that he's not truly worth $25 million a year. He might not be a number one. Some people have indicated, you know, where they try to pay Amari Cooper $22 million a year, which is very true. But in their eyes, they seen Amari Cooper as being a number one wide receiver from the route running aspect. I just think that, you know, Terry wants to be here, but if Washington keeps playing hardball, that messaging from him is going to change completely, and he's going to want to explore his options elsewhere.
Yep. I'll go next if that's all right. I'm on the team pay Terry whatever he wants, like whatever the dollar amount is. I think I tweeted this other day. Washington Commanders, they have to pay a bad team tax. Like, they're not a destination. I'm not really sure how much free agents or just players in general like want to go to Washington. So you got a guy that you got in the third round who's great on and off the field. The fans love him. He's like the one player I think every fan of this team for the most part has a positive opinion of. And he got it out the mud. Third round pick, whatever came. He's a top 10, top 12 wide receiver, whatever you want to say. If you make him the fifth highest paid wide receiver, okay, people might hand ring a little bit for like a day or so. But I mean, realistically, are people going to go that crazy about it? I mean, in a couple months, Justin Jefferson is going to completely blow that deal away. So in a couple months, it's going to be a completely reset market. So in that case, pay Terry whatever he wants. And Terry shouldn't come to camp until he gets the number. He shouldn't come off that number. But I will say, his number is like 2.7 this year. I mean, like, I guess he could, you know, negotiate and hold out for that number, but I mean, is he really willing to pay? I mean, to play on 2.7 this year and risk, you know, whatever type of injury that could happen, and then he's kind of screwed. So, as a fan of his, I want him to get his money, but I also could see that it might not be 25, but if it's like 2021. I mean, would you rather just take the security of that rather than play on that $3 million this year? And then something happens, you get injured, you get tackled from behind, get horse collar tackle, you tear your ACL, and then where are you at then? So it's an interesting situation.
So let's dive into, because when we were asking about should Terry re-sign before camp, you said you think that he should hold out until he gets his deal. Now, what does hold out mean for you? Are you saying hold out of training camp into the regular season, or hold out until the regular season, just skipping training camp? What was you thinking when you said hold out until he gets his deal?
So I think it starts getting ugly when you start missing games, but into training camp, yeah. And at a certain point, I guess you do have to report. And at that point, you're doing a Kirk Cousins thing where you're betting on yourself and saying, listen, I know where this is going. It's not headed to a good place. I'm gonna play this out, and you know, we'll go for there. I think Terry should get paid. But I can see, like, from Ron Rivera, Washington's point of view, they're saying, you're really going to play on this, you know, play on that $3 million deal and, you know, possibly get injured or something like that. So I can understand why they're playing hardball. But me personally, I think Terry should hold out until, you know, he gets the number he wants. Like, this franchise doesn't deserve the benefit of the doubt. They don't deserve to have people take sweetheart deals. They are what they are, and you know, they finally got somebody that's worth something. They should pay him.
Yeah, I mean, just to chime in real quick on that, it don't even have nothing to do with the franchise. It's like, bro, I didn't put up these numbers. You feel me? Oh, yeah. I'm due my value, and my value is what the market dictates. If AJ Brown is getting $25 million to go to a new team, who's to say I can't force myself to go to a new team too? I also have that in my pocket that I could pull out. A lot of teams say, oh, we're not going to trade this player, blah, blah, blah. Mike Vrabel did the same thing with A.J. Brown. You were hearing they weren't trading him nowhere. Then A.J. started getting a bit more aggressive, and he got on Twitter, and what did he do? And Ron, that's why D'Angelo Hall came out, my guy. He came out and said something, you know, a couple weeks ago. I guess he called into the radio show. But it's like, they have too much of an old school mindset. They're not innovative in how they want to pursue players and how they want to do things. And that's what puts them in these type of positions. When you have a guy that does everything right for a franchise and also brings value to your team on the field, you pay that person. You don't go through these type of spats publicly. You don't let these type of things get to this type of point where now you're going into your offseason, you're 6 weeks away from training camp, not knowing if you're number one wide receiver who you just brought in a quarterback to prove that you can make this offense work. And now you have issues with your number one wide receiver just because you don't want to pay him. when the market
he's the face of your marketing campaign. He's the face of your marketing campaign. He's on the header of your Twitter. He's all over your website. Like
I want to chime in. Here's so I disagree in the sense that, you know, where AJ and them are going, but you have to get this done right now. The only reason this is an issue is because of Terry McLaurin's name right now. Like, fans want Terry McLaurin here. But the truth of the matter, if I think we have to start looking at what this regime's tendencies are. And so far, the tendencies are they don't get things done in June, so to speak, when it comes to contract extensions. Jonathan Allen last year when he signed his contract extension was July 30th. But no one cared because Jonathan Allen's played on defense and he's not the face of the franchise, so to speak, like a Terry McLaurin is. You know, he's the face of a bad franchise right now. So everyone wants this Terry thing done. But Jonathan Allen was able to quietly kind of, you know, negotiate. And AJ called it a bargain deal, which, I mean, I guess you could say it's a bargain deal because he didn't get the $21 million, but he's still the fourth highest paid defensive tackle in the NFL right now. So, I mean, he's getting above average salary. I mean, Aaron Donald obviously crushes the market at $31 million a year. And also, I think another thing fans are kind of, you know, overplaying is the AAV of the contract details. Like, you know, people are saying, oh, you're getting $25 million a year. I think we need to focus more on the guaranteed money. What's the guaranteed money that Terry is seeking? A.J. Brown got a $57 million guaranteed money. That's something that's probably the baseline of where you want to start with Terry. So I wouldn't look at it so much as if you sign Terry to 4 years, $100 million, you're paying him $25 million a year. No, I'm going to look at the guaranteed money because, I mean, if you're the team, you're worried about the guaranteed money, you're worried about how much you're paying them. You don't want to go over a certain amount. You have a cap with that. And Terry, you know, A.J. did kind of mention this that I agree with, that they don't know if he's a number one receiver or not. I mean, Terry's a great receiver. I think he's an excellent receiver. But I also don't think teams look at Terry McLaurin and say, hey, we need to focus two or three guys on Terry McLaurin. Some teams do feel like they can put one guy on Terry and he'll be fine. But Terry's impact goes beyond the field with this Washington franchise. That's the thing. Just like Jonathan Allen, Jonathan Allen's impact goes with leadership. He's an extra coach in the field. Terry is that guy. Terry is that guy on offense. He's the guy the coaches rely on. He's the guy who's going to do things the way they want to be done. So, Terry, you have to look at it from that standpoint. If you have to overpay a little bit with Terry, you're just going to have to do it because he's a guy you just can't let go. Now, as far as do I think Terry should sign before training camp? I think Terry should do what's best for Terry because, as Cole mentioned, Terry's only playing on a little chump change right now. And, you know, if he doesn't play this year, he's going to get a huge contract. I mean, I'm not talking about just a holdout in training camp, you know, a holdout a couple of games. Terry can sit out a whole year, and Terry's still going to get a big contract next year, whether it's going to be from some team trying to sign him or whether the Washington Commanders wants the franchise tag.
So my question to you all was part of this conversation, right? And now we answered ours. I think Terry should resign before camp. That's my short, quick answer. I think that's probably more beneficial for both sides, honestly. But my thing is, when we talk about if they don't know if he's the number one and the $25 million number, do y'all think that there's a cap for the commander side for receivers in general? Like, my thing is, I had this conversation with George on a podcast, George Carmi, and we had touched this conversation, but I think the thing is, like, what if Washington stood on a principle, right? What if they stood on, like, yes, we love receivers. Yes, we love Terry. And to an extent, they offered to pay Amari Cooper 21 or 22. I don't know what that number represented at the time, which was, what, 2020 or something like that. I don't know what that number represented in terms of how high he would have been in terms of.
He would have been around number one or number two, just little bit below Julio Jones.
Just a little bit.
Okay,
so that actually changes the perspective and gives you an idea of how they value receivers. So maybe this question may be a bunch of nothing, but do you all believe that there's a cap in what they see in receivers and what they'll be willing to pay for a receiver and maybe even for a particular receiver? Like, if they don't think that he's a number one or a true number one, like a 1A, are we tripping over not paying them 25 mil? If that's how they feel.
Jamal, I think the real.
Hold up, AJ. I want to ask.
I was just gonna say maybe the better question is, do we even think that Washington believes he's a top 10 wide receiver in this league?
Yeah, I think that's a good question.
And that's kind of gonna play on the question I was gonna ask you all. Do you all think Terry McLaurin is a top 10 wide receiver? Do you all that's the question. So if we're sitting here saying that, what is the team saying? And can you fault the team for having a cap on Terry McLaurin?
I can't fault him. I don't think he's a top 10.
I think you can make arguments for a lot of guys, especially once you get to like that seven to 12 range. I think if I'm negotiating from his point of view, if I can make arguments with whoever you have 7 through 12, then I can realistically ask for a deal in that range.
Well, I guess the main argument you can make as his representation, if you name me your top 10 wide receivers and how many years have they consecutively played with the same quarterback?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Let's see. Go ahead. Because I'm about to. It's this list that's going to help for
change. I'm not going to make a list, but
yeah.
But I was going to say this. So I'm about to for read Jamal, these, I'm about to read the film guy. Go ahead, Dre. No, I was going. This is for Jamal actually, because Jamal watches a lot of film. You watch film, Jamal. Now we could talk about quarterbacks all day. You know the quarterbacks that Terry had, which is obviously he's had the shit of the brunt, but. Coverage-wise, do you see teams paying a lot of attention to Terry McLaurin? And do you think if they aren't paying a lot of attention to Terry McLaurin, is it solely because of the quarterback play, or do they think they have a guy that can check Terry McLaurin?
It's funny that you asked about Terry, too, because on the project that I told you all that I'm on, my first player I had to scout was Terry McLaurin. And look, he's a good receiver, right? But I think when you look at how he plays, and I'll do the shortened version of it, you're seeing bracket coverage, right? But you're not seeing like a true emphasis on trying to stop Terry with multiple defenders. Like you're seeing cornerbacks and defenses check him with one receiver and maybe that single high, not necessarily focus on him, but like if you have a cover three shell or a cover one. It's really just that man on man type of thing, and there's a lot of receivers. I mean, a lot of cornerbacks that's playing off coverage against Terry McLaurin. They're still having some type of success. Depending on who the corner is, Diggs didn't really play that well against him. I think I watched him against the Cowboys, a couple other teams too, but he did have success against him. He didn't have success against others. It was a mixed bag, but he didn't really dominate, especially in man coverage. He really didn't dominate. Some of these guys, and one of the things that people talk about or don't talk about enough is how he plays against press coverage. Like he's not necessarily a receiver who's going to consistently beat press coverage. That's something that he lacks in. And I think maybe if you're talking about a true number one receiver who can beat multiple coverages and multiple techniques, then maybe you have to start digging into that aspect too. Like what else are they seeing that's saying, you know, if we're going to pay him to be this type of guy on the field, not the off the field or the leadership and the perspective from the fan point, like if we're seeing all these other things and how he can defeat certain coverages and certain levels of the field, then maybe they're factoring all of that into the financial decision as well.
I mean, I think the key component here for Terry and his team is we have not played with a consistent quarterback for 2 years straight. And that's the main thing. Like Terry definitely has his struggles. He's not perfect. I know he's been working on his release with Doug Baldwin, who used to play with the Seattle Seahawks. I don't really think defenses go into their game planning scared of him. Like he's not a DeAndre Hopkins, a Tyreek Hill, not even like a Cooper Kupp. Because they don't really move him around that much. And, I mean, Maul, you could probably speak to that best because I have not dissected all of his film, but I've watched every Washington game ever that he's played in. So I kind of see that they don't move him around a lot. But, I mean, I just think in this position, it's like you bring in Carson Wentz. Now you have to give me the opportunity to play with this guy and to prove to you that I'm worth every single dollar because you've now made a commitment to a quarterback. When you trade that type of capital for a quarterback, That tells me that you believe in this guy to be the future quarterback for this team. So that's how you have to play on it from a negotiation standpoint. It's like, okay, you finally made that commitment to a quarterback. Now I should be putting up even higher numbers, but I still deserve what I deserve because of what I've done playing with journeyman quarterbacks and all type of different guys over the span of my career. But I'm really interested to see how it plays out. A lot of people are giving the Jonathan Allen example. That's cool and all, but there really wasn't no hoopla behind Jonathan Allen signing.
Yeah, he wasn't pissed off.
He wasn't mad. That means they were close in numbers. There was good conversation.
But is Terry pissed? That's the question we had asked.
It seems like it if he's not in camp.
He's pissed if he missed.
I think he's following agent guidance. Agent's telling him, hey, don't show up.
When you have a guy like that who cares that much about the team and puts his all into it, he wants to be there more than you know it. But
that's why
if they were closer in number, he would have been at minicamp. If this was the difference between $2 million or something, he would have been at minicamp. But when he's not at minicamp, that tells you everything you need to know. They're not even.
But let me ask you all this. I got something I want to ask.
And it's the last
one,
so we can transition. Yep.
And we'll do that. How much of – now, this is – AJ might not like this too much, but how much has what Jahan Dotson has showed them earlier is affecting some of these contract negotiations? Because that may be something they're saying, hey, we got this guy here, and they still like De'Ami Brown. We got a cap on what we're paying, Terry, because we like these guys here.
I think it's not necessarily what he's done in, like, OTAs or the minicamp. I think some franchises just are trying to be a little bit too analytical. You take the Titans, for example, with the A.J. Brown situation. They traded him and didn't want to pay him to go draft another wide receiver that they don't know what they're going to get out of Treylon Burks. You know what you have in Terry McLaurin. The whole point in drafting and hitting on these type of prospects is so that you can keep them within your regime and you can pay them. You don't draft a guy third round, develop him. He exceeds all of those tiers that you set up for him. And now it's time to pay him. Okay. You want to just say, nah, fuck you, bro. Like, we going to draft another wide receiver. We'll see what Jahan Dotson can do alongside Curtis Samuel, who can barely get on the field. And De'Ami Brown, who we don't even know who the hell we have. Like, we don't know what we got in him. You don't do that. That's what I'm saying. It all boils down to being an innovative team and understanding the whole ideal of how everything works, because you not just have Terry McLaurin trying to get a contract. You have De'Ron Payne in the same situation along with the other free agents. But those are two guys in-house that you drafted that you're not doing your best job to pay. It's not even overpaying. You're paying what the market dictates for Terry McLaurin. We shouldn't even be having this conversation. This deal should have been done. Remember, when we started 2022 season conversation, like after the season recap, the first thing that both of you guys said, Dre and Maul, was number one thing is sign Terry McLaurin and then pursue a quarterback.
Would it have been beneficial to Terry to sign a contract then? Terry, actually, he's doing the right thing, in my opinion. Why would you sign a contract in January when you could wait till the market plays out and see what you can get? Now he's going to get
what
he would have took a John Allen deal.
I was right there. Yeah, I was right there. I was telling y'all, like, he shouldn't sign immediately. He should see what the market dictate. Now you've seen what the market dictate when Tyreek Hill got drafted. You didn't even need to wait for A.J. Brown to get traded. I already told y'all the marketplace for the wide receiver is going to be 23, 25 mil. Like, Devontae Adams ain't really do too much with the market. A lot of people are saying Christian Kirk. No, Christian Kirk ain't do shit with the market. Like, it was already going to be that type of number for a guy like that. It's just the way that it was inflated and reported that it made it seem like Christian Kirk got so much more. But I just feel like Ron Rivera is just not doing a good job of getting these type of things done. And that's why I broke down the full scope.
Yeah.
You're not really seeing them trying their best to retain their own guys. You see the J.D. McKissick situation. They could have kept Matt Ioannidis. They didn't need to use the second round pick on a D-tackle. But they went and created that situation for themselves.
But does Matt play that two-gap that they looking for? Matt wasn't playing that two-gap that he was looking for.
Hey, I tell you who could have played that, Tim Settle. another guy that they just let go to the Buffalo. He could have played
they
that.
They bungled that.
You just keep seeing them. You just keep seeing them create more issues for themselves. And there's nothing that has shown that they are doing their best to keep their own guys at a higher value or what the market really dictates. They're just trying to get bargain deals on everybody.
Yeah, I think
it's one of the reasons why they don't have a free agent linebacker right now that people are rumoring about.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So I think just like that old school thinking that, you know, as a wide receiver, you know, we can just replace that easily. You know, we got Terry in the third round, we can replace that. You look at the analytics more and more, like wide receiver is an extremely important position. And I feel like a team led by Ron Rivera, like no offense, and the Martys, they might not be on the cutting edge of that type of analytical thinking. So you have a good wide receiver, keep him. But their mindset is, oh, you know, we got him in third round, we can just replace him. Put one De'Ami Brown there, put a Jahan Dotson there. I do think that's affecting their thinking. And I do think to some degree, there's a reason why, maybe I'm just being a conspiracy theorist, that Jahan Dotson's name is just like everywhere. Like, I mean, I was excited that they drafted him and all that, but I feel like the hype is getting crazy. And I think that there's a little bit of strategy involved with that. But
they trying to make him Terry McLaurin 2.0.
Yeah. So, we'll see. Go ahead.
No, you good. I was just going to say, I think that's a good, Dre, that's a good training camp question, because we're starting to see the tea leaves fall, like in the OTAs and minicamps, but let's follow that storyline come training camp and see how they're reacting. And especially if Terry hasn't signed immediately, and if, you know, there's some lingering no-shows in that time. So let's go ahead and transition. Let me catch up with some of the comments, man. I appreciate everybody in here chopping it up with the fellas, Alter Ego. Let me read, because I know I started at first, but I don't like the way this StreamYard thing starts. But Alter Ego said the main thing about Terry for him is the quarterbacks he's had. He would definitely pass stat-wise all the receivers in his class if he had a better quarterback play. They should start paying Terry this year and use this year's cap. Take that. What's going on, Big Dog? He said quarterback play is a factor. Roger Smith is checking in. Appreciate you, Big Dog. Alter Ego said we are also tripping, by the way. If Terry had a quarterback, he'd be a top 10 receiver. I still think I disagree with you, but it's okay. Roger said that they are too reactive instead of being proactive. It's their fault that the cost went up. If they don't pay him, you will see an exodus of the good players we do have. Take that, then followed up with production, consistency, and leadership. Speaking on Terry McLaurin, gotta lock him up. And then he mentioned Rivera is scared of his team getting old, like in Carolina. Ooh. All right, let's get into the next topic, man. Let's actually, let's get into, since we're talking about Ron Rivera right quick, I think that's a smoother transition. We can talk about the hot seats and then circle back to training camp, or the training camp topic. The hot seat level for Rivera, Turner, and JDR, the three main cogs on the offense, defense, and team overall. And then if you want to dive, AJ, after we rate these guys, if you want to dive into the front office or collective key cogs, then, you know, the floor is yours. And the floor is yours, Dre and Cole, to do the same thing. Everybody in the chat, let's get the ratings in. What's your hot seat level on a scale of 1 to 10 for Rivera, Turner, and JDR, and why? Let us know. But we'll start off, we'll do one at a time for us. And I'm going to start with you, Cole, on this one. We're going to start with the position coaches or the coordinators, and we're going to start with JDR. Your scale of 1 to 10, what is the hot seat level rating for Jack Del Rio, and why?
I mean, I think he's got to be at an 8. And, I mean, it's not even really mainly a football issue right now, right? You know, he's causing distractions. Like, it's one thing to have whatever your views are. It's another thing is when, you know, the team's already has, you know, they're getting called on a Capitol Hill, you know, they can't get a stadium deal right. All this negative energy, and then your defensive coordinator is on Twitter acting a fool. So just off the strength of that, I think he's at an 8. And let me tell you, you know, Trevor Lawrence and Jared Goff start cooking us the first 2 weeks, I think he definitely is going to be the sacrificial lamb. If I had to guess, like he should be a little nervous, for sure.
Very out with this one. Oh, yeah. No, we're going to go one at a time. So you good, Cole. Okay.
No, I was going to say I agree 100% with Cole on Jack Del Rio. I mean, like you said, it's not just about football at this point. I will put it at about 8 for Jack Del Rio. I mean, as a matter of fact, while this podcast is, you know, recording, there's another Washington Post report about sexual assault and this big thing. I haven't read it yet, but apparently it's some, you know, big thing that just dropped tonight, a night before the congressional hearings, might I add. But that's a thing.
Yeah, Washington Post.
Yeah, Washington Post, they just dropped one of their articles, and they, you know, the timing is perfect because the congressional hearings are tomorrow, I believe. So that's Jack Del Rio doing what he did, like Cole said, regardless of his views, regardless of how, you know, how anyone feels about what he said, the timing just couldn't be any more bad. I mean, you just don't come out and just do that with this team amid all the investigations and the scandals and the news reports that they're getting the bad negative press. It just adds to it. Like, I mean, you have the NAACP chiming in on Jack Del Rio's reports. So Jack Del Rio, I mean, and this is also coming off a season where the defense tremendously was underwhelmed. I mean, they just didn't do anything to expectation level, and yet this guy wants to come out and start spewing shit and get national media and not even just sports media. You're talking about just media all over the world, attention on your back when you already have the negative attention. He's at least maybe an 8, maybe a 9 for Jack Del Rio. He can go before the rest of them do.
Fellas, this one is bad. This why he ain't
This why
he ain't want to show up. Like, typically, and I'm going to put it in the chat for everybody who hasn't seen it. But so I'll read it and then we'll get back to the actual point of our show. But so from Will Hobson said that a former Washington NFL employee accused Daniel Snyder in April of 2009 of asking her for sex, groping her and attempting to remove her clothes, according to a letter sent by an attorney for the team to the woman's lawyer that year. There's some more follow-up tweets after that, but that is what's going on. And typically, and the reason why I say he didn't want to show up is typically when you do things like this, you have to reach out to, you know, Daniel Snyder for comment or any type of response. So I think he had an idea that it was about to drop soon. And I think I don't think the hearing was the exact date that it was going to drop, but I think he had an idea that it was going to drop around this time. So I'll just leave it at that. I'll put it in chat for everybody else. But yeah, that one is something.
If they could get Vince McMahon out of here, even though that's not the same situation, like, Dan can definitely be touched. Like, wow.
Check his taxes. I mean, get him on the Al Capone charge or some
bro.
Shit.
I think at this point, man, the other NFL owners are going to have to step in. Man, yeah. You're making the shield look bad. But, I mean, I guess what Roger Goodell is supposed to testify tomorrow, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. They've been
I mean, rightfully so. He gets paid $45 million a year to not do shit.
Yeah.
Man, Snyder been in the boat since last week, bro. And that's – and what's crazy, I don't know how that reporter found that shit out. I actually reached out to him like, damn, bro, how the fuck did you do that? Like, he was like, he got a tip. He was watching boats, I guess, departure, dock, shit. I don't know. I was like, mm-hmm. That's crazy. But at the end of the day, I guess what we're talking about was Jack Del Rio's bum ass. I feel like he should have been fired last year. So with all the other commentary, man, it's a fit team for me. Like, you're not even good at your job to be talking that out of pocket. You feel me? Like, you're not that good at your job to be talking out of pocket. Like, I think – I don't know. The whole situation is just weird to me. Like, the fact that Ron Rivera even brought him in, it just gave me, like, old regime moves. Like, I wasn't even really hyped with the fact that he brought in Jack Del Rio to run the defense. I just feel like a lot of shit has been – like old school, and it's crazy because it's like two of your guys that ran your defense went on to get head coaching jobs, if I'm not mistaken. Sean McDermott and who was the black coach that was with Arizona? for Wilkes. Like 1 year.
Steve Wilkes.
Scott Turner was young, though, AJ. Scott Turner was young. That wasn't old.
No, Sean McDermott. He said Sean McDermott.
But AJ was saying that a lot of the approaches he took to the coaching staff was old. And I'm saying Scott Turner was a young guy. Unproven as well.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. With
North's son.
With respect. But it's North Turner's son. So it's all, hey, my homies. Nepotism, in a sense. Like, it's all my homies. But overall, like, when it comes to Jack Del Rio and Ron Rivera, man, I don't know what they got on each other, but even that $100,000 fine is not really a fine. That's a donation that you can write off on your taxes. So, hey, bro, it is what it is, man. It's not like it went to fund former players. It went to fund an organization you can write off on your taxes. It's just the whole situation is just weird to me.
That's
what I said. Like, I don't get it. Like, this made news waves on every major network.
It would have been a whole different thing if they fired him, though.
No, it would have been perfect because we're also forgetting the team changed their name. This is supposed to be a new regime. This is supposed to be a new tenureship of fans, all of this, but it's more of the same. What are you taking command of? Nothing.
Yeah. You fire him and you'll have Ben Shapiro and Tucker Carlson and all that coming.
That's cool. We don't fuck with those people anyway.
They watch sports when they have something to like to talk about.
Yeah, fuck them though. Like, I agree. Those people.
But a lot of their fans left when the kneeling of the national anthem happened. So I'll be okay with Ben Shapiro being pissed off.
I'm cool with all those people on that side being pissed off. I just felt like to not really you put your players in a bad predicament to have to answer questions about Jack Del Rio when they're not financially as secured as NBA players to really stand up and really give their true opinion. Like, you got motherfuckers acting like, well, if he don't do nothing to me, man, then, you know, all I could do is just respect Jack Del Rio and what he does to me. Like, that's all bullshit. They talk about all this stuff behind closed doors, you know, and it affects them. But in the reality of it, your NFL player, your contract is not guaranteed. You may get released. You might have some hateration coming from the background. This motherfucker ain't trying to put you in the right position to win, all type of shit. And it's just like they just got to rock with it. And Ron didn't really put his foot down. Like, his statement that they released for the team does not align with anything that they did to keep Jack Del Rio here.
So here's my thing. And you touched – so for me – I'm gonna say eight. Matter of fact, I'm gonna say nine. To be honest with you, his high seed is at a nine. Main reason being has a lot to do with the regression from the first year to the second year, the inability to get William Jackson to understand how to really play zone coverage. And it's like when people talk about man versus zone corners, like the more I started, what the hell are you doing? The more I started understanding about, you know, the principles, like there's still man principles within zone coverage, but if you aren't aligning yourself up properly pre-snap, you're not going to be able to even help yourself out in certain situations. So there's a lot that isn't really going on, or that is underwhelming with William Jackson. But I say that to say nine from the regression from year one to year two, but also the off the field adage that you brought to the team, and they don't really have time for that. For all the reasons you all explained. So I'll continue the conversation with, I don't like that statement that Rivera put out wasn't even what he said when or how he said when he went to the presser after the public statement. Like, it was a different tone saying that, you know, you encourage those type of, you know, freedom of speeches and all those other things, right? And that's cool. I understand it. But I feel like if the message was uniform from the actual written statement that y'all pull out versus in addition to what you said in the presser, then that'd be one thing. So those two contradicted themselves and brought two different tones to the response to Jack Del Rio and what he had put out. I think that kind of is a question mark in terms of how they really feel with Jack Del Rio. The first statement clearly indicated that they don't agree with Del Rio's thoughts entirely. Like, that's what they said. So Who knows how they really feel behind closed doors? I don't know what the truth is. Is the truth what he said in the presser, or is the truth what he said in that statement? That's the first thing. The second thing is, to AJ's point, and I really want people to understand this because it's so frustrating hearing fans talk about this, and sometimes hearing some of the media who don't cover the whole conversation within itself or the whole context within itself. Some of these players who, like, when you're asking four or five players at mini camps or OTAs how they feel about the situation, and you come back and say, oh, well, the team is really upset about this. You ask five of fucking 90 people how they feel about a situation, and five of them said they're minding their business. Like, five of them said that. So because those five that you asked, one of them happened to be one of the leaders of the defense, says one thing, you gonna roll with it? I don't think that's, I don't even think you're doing yourself a favor by saying, oh, they said that they're speaking for the team. No, they're not speaking for the team. These are also people that's getting paid or in the spotlight for the team because of their financial situation and the fact that they start. There's other peoples on the team who may not even feel that type of way, but they can't say nothing about it. And they may not even talk about it to counter AJ. Like, they may not talk about it, but they say, because I don't have that voice or because I don't have that leeway, I'm gonna just let it go. But I know how I feel about him moving forward. So I don't want to make this a whole political thing, in which we haven't done, but I just feel like that is an angle that actually ups the ante in terms of the hot seat or the performance that he has to bring Jack Del Rio in 2022. There's a lot going on here, and if he doesn't perform and put out a good product defensively, hey, what's the point of keeping you around?
Bro, what's the point? Your defensive coordinator made national news, bro. Like, even when they travel this year on the road, teams are going to be, like, directing their anger towards him with dust-up comments, all that. That's wild. That's a major distraction. That's out of pocket.
Yeah. Okay, let's get to the next player. I see a player. Next coordinator, excuse me. Scott Turner. I'm going to start with Dre on this one. Scott Turner, scale of 1 to 10, what's the hot seat level for the offensive coordinator for Washington?
Scott Turner, he's going to be directly tied to Ron Rivera, no matter how anyone feels about Scott Turner. I mean, that's Ron Rivera's kind of pet project, in a sense to say, hey, you know, I took a chance on this guy. He's North Turner's son. I believe in him. He was here with me in Carolina. He wasn't office coordinator for Ron Rivera in Carolina, but I believe he coached quarterbacks, I believe. But he's, you know, a lot of our fans kind of go back to Kevin O'Connell. They say, well, you know, they should have kept Kevin O'Connell as the offensive coordinator. He worked so well with Dwayne Haskins those last few games. But Ron went with Scott Turner. So this is like his pet project. I mean, it's a little different from Jack Del Rio in a sense, but he went with the proven defensive coordinator. I mean, you know, as much as how we feel about Jack Del Rio, we talk about him now. We didn't like his defense last year. You know, we hate him speaking at times when it just doesn't need to be spoken. But his defenses were always top five, and he had a hell of a resume coming into Washington. So we all thought that was the right decision. But Scott Turner was the one we questioned from the beginning. This is the decision. Like, Ron, did you make the right decision, or is this nepotism? Are you just doing this because this North Turner's son? So his legacy at this moment is tied to Ron Rivera. And, you know, I'm one of those ones, or one of those fans that's a little sympathetic or empathetic towards Scott Turner, in the sense of what he's had to deal with since he's got here. Like, we like to talk about what Terry McLaurin has had to deal with, you know, with quarterbacks and, you know, well, the offensive coordinator has to deal with these same quarterbacks that Terry McLaurin is catching the balls from. So it's kind of hard to kind of open up playbooks when you have a guy, and, you know, God rest his soul, and Dwayne Haskins, who just wasn't ready for the NFL at the time they drafted the guy. Alex Smith, one leg. You know, Kyle Allen, he had a couple of games. He got injured. He breaks his leg or whatever in two or three games. And then you have Taylor Heinicke, who everyone can probably concede is a really good backup quarterback in the NFL. But Taylor Heinicke is not a starting caliber quarterback. He doesn't have the NFL arm talent to be a starting caliber quarterback. So that's what Scott Turner has kind of had to deal with. And I think Ron kind of looks at that as well and say, hey, you know, this guy, we need to see what he can do with a real quarterback, or at least an NFL arm, you know, at his disposal. And that's what you get to see in Carson Wentz. So I think his, at the end of the day, I think his on a scale of 10, I will probably rate Scott Turner at about a 6, and I will probably put Ron around the same thing at about a 6 because they're tied together.
AJ, go ahead. You got the floor.
Yeah, I mean, I think Scott Turner's a 9 for me. Honestly, I think the whole coaching staff is on the hot seat. You know, that's one of the main things for me. I think they've done a lot of the shopping of these players that they wanted to pursue. You know, whether it be Ryan Fitzpatrick, he wasn't going to be a long-term answer. So he was only going to be here for 1 year anyways. He's like, what, 40-something? You know, I guess we will see what he does with Carson Wentz. But I know what he did do in Carolina, and that shit ain't look good either. So he really has not looked good anywhere that
he was a job. 4 games, AJ. 4 games he was an OC in Carolina. That was the last 4 games.
It don't matter. I advise y'all to watch the Pivot episode that came out today with Mike Tomlin. Oh, yeah, and he was just talking about having your team prepared for moments. Like, guys should be able to get the job done. I mean, of course, they've had some quarterback issues over there as well. But I just feel like with Scott Turner, a lot of people say, oh, he didn't have the quarterback. Well, his man that hired him ain't bringing the damn quarterback. So I can only judge him for what he presents to me on TV. You feel me? And what I got to judge him based off is how he put Taylor Heinicke in situations. I feel like he didn't use Taylor Heinicke's mobility to the best of his ability, and that was his bigger attribute. I felt like we sat here and watched Taylor Heinicke try to play in the pocket way too many times, and he doesn't have arm strength. So, yeah, maybe there might have been some guys open downfield, but Maul just watched Terry McLaurin's tape. Nobody was bracketing him and challenging him because they didn't trust the quarterback. So you still had opportunity to bring in guys that fit best within the backup role as well. I just think with Scott Turner overall, you know, I really don't know what he does well. That's my main gripe. I have no clue what he does well as an offensive coordinator. Other teams, I got an idea.
What was your opinion on Brian Daboll before he was with Buffalo? Did you have an opinion on Brian Daboll? I think Scott Turner's trajectory is a little bit similar to Brian Daboll. He was horrible. He was with Cleveland and Miami. Those bad. He was the offensive coordinators of some really historically bad teams. Then he got Josh Allen.
I feel like with Brian Daboll, he got his job because of Josh Allen. Josh Allen has the right to improvise. Does a great job of playing off script.
But you don't like Josh Allen.
I don't like Josh Allen personally. As like, if I were to start a team, he wouldn't be my first 3 options of quarterbacks that I would pick. But the pairing of him being able to improvise alongside Stephon Diggs, yeah, it works. And that's what got Brian Daboll his job. We'll see if that should have worked with Daniel Jones. I bet you it won't. Like, at the end of the day, he was smart enough to know, like, I have this talented-ass quarterback. He can do what he wants to do. We'll draw up some things that make sense. But it's cool if he freelances and uses God-given talent. And I feel like what Scott Turner didn't do with Taylor Heinicke was let him use his God-given talent more, which was the ability to throw on the run and get outside of the pocket. We've seen too many times he try to force him to play within the pocket. And this is someone he has a rapport with outside of even Washington. He knew him in Carolina. And Ron knew him in Carolina as well when he was backing up Cam Newton and Kyle Allen and all those things. I'm just not sold on Scott Turner. Like I said, I don't have nothing against him. I just don't know what he does well. Like, I have not seen him really call a full game yet.
So yours is at a 9, AJ, for Scott. Yes, or it's 9, because you said for the whole thing. So Scott and Ron, is that a 9? We can go to Ron after this. I just didn't know if you, because I know you mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, I think for Ron, I'm at a 10, man. I'm over it.
All right. Let's go ahead with Ron. Cole, where you at on Scott Turner? What's your one? Oh, let me capture some comments. My bad. 757, what's good, bro? Appreciate you checking in. He said Ron. This is speaking on the Jack Del Rio situation. Ron just trying to put out another fire and get back to football. Or organization is always in some type of dysfunction. Alter Ego mentioned, I think it would be hard for Ron to fire Dale Dusto 2 months before the start of training camp. Do y'all think the defense? Oh, no, well, we're not talking about before the season starts. We're talking about, you know, after the season. But he said, do y'all think a defensive coordinator is that replaceable, especially when Ron wants to really make sure as the season? So, yeah, we're not talking about before the season or during the season, unless it's towards the end of the season. Who knows? But 757 also mentioned Scott Turner is not on a hot seat unless the offense totally fails. Del Rio is hard. Hart, on the other hand, better hope he can turn it around. Del Rio is definitely on the hot seat. And take that mentioned. Ron is the only guy who can keep Snyder out of the football operation. So I hope he works out here. Some grades. Alter Ego said Ron is at a 7 and Del Rio is at a 9 on the hot seat. All right, Cole, floor is yours. Where are you on Scott Turner?
Yeah, so with Scott Turner, I think I'm probably at a let's say a 6. I think in general, like, him and Ron are pretty safe. Like, I don't think there's like any chance either one of them are like in any danger. But for me, I'm at a 6 with Scott Turner. This is what I'll say. Like, he has no place to hide this year. Like, in 2020, I think the team as a whole, no one expected anything from the team. And then you had, you know, Dwayne, you had Alex Smith with one leg, you had Kyle Allen. So he had a built-in excuse. Last year, Fitz gets hurt in the like first half, whatever it was, early second half. Built-in excuse right there because you had Taylor Heinicke and, you know, everybody, you know, whatever you want to say about Taylor Heinicke. There's no excuses. You have Carson Wentz, knock on wood. He's at the bare minimum, he's an average NFL quarterback with, you know, plus, you know, physical tools. There's nowhere to hide. So what I'll say about Scott Turner is, you know, based on the quarterbacks he's had so far, I don't know. I can't say he's a bad offensive coordinator, but I feel pretty confident saying that he's not a great one. Because I do think, like, a great offensive coordinator, somebody like Kyle Shanahan or someone like that, has a way of elevating average to mediocre talent. I mean, just use that as a comparison. Kyle Shanahan had Rex Grossman, you know, moving offenses up and down. He had Matt Schwab moving offenses up and down. So in that sense, I don't think Scott Turner is, like, great. But I would be interested to see if he is good, average, and I think we'll be able to get to see that this year. But, I mean, personally, I don't really – like, as far as, like, from the team's point of view, him and Ron, I think as long as they want to be here and, like Dre said, like, Scott Turner is Ron's little pet, like, they're – I think they're pretty lock steady.
What Cole, why do you think they're safe? I'm curious why some people think that Ron especially is safe.
I just think – We're taking it out of football right now. I just think there's way too much going on with this team for there to be any type of coaching change. Even if things really, really got off the rails. I think right now, all this team cares about winning, but I think PR and continuity and all that is pretty close to winning. And in that case, Ron might be the face of the franchise right now. As far as, like, nationally, he's talking to all the beat writers, like, they all love him to death. He's like what gives the franchise credibility in a way. And I can't see them making a change, barring some type of unforeseen craziness or like some kind of scandal involving him. I just can't see it.
Now, AJ, before you respond, I want to say I agree with Cole 100% on this. But my question is, now that brings to the question, if you were to fire Ron Rivera like you want to right now, do you want Dan Snyder leading a coaching change right now while he's on a yacht somewhere evading Congress? Is that what you want, AJ?
I mean, I don't really have this big vendetta against Dan Snyder as most people do. Like, I think he wants to win. He's shown that he wants to win. Maybe he doesn't do the best job of hiring coaches, but at the end of the day, I think I'd rather my owner be aggressive in wanting to win versus, let's say, Mike Brown of the Cincinnati Bengals that wanted to spend money. I just don't think that the NFL, you know, with what we just read on air, is going to allow this guy to continue representing a team and owning a team. They have to step up. All these things can't happen. So, honestly, I think the Commanders may have a new owner before the end of the season or right after. I don't even think they'll be the Commanders anymore. I think a name change had happened as well. If you have a new owner come in, bro, they're not rocking with no Commanders.
What's up with all this Commanders shit? Get rid of all this, man. We're going to put a new marketing money. We're going to do everything. We're going to change everything up. Yep.
Poor Jason.
That name is weak as hell. Like, Commanders is weak as shit. So I really don't know. But, I mean, what we read is pretty damning. You feel me? Because now it actually ties them to sexual assault.
Yeah, like that's like
they're saying he did it. Not employees. Exactly. They're saying he did that shit. Like he said, take off your clothes.
Grope. That's a big word. Like, you know, wow. Yeah.
Like 50 Cent said, whatever they said, he did that shit. He did
it. And part of that too, and was that the whole deal was that where is it at? The investigation council or investigation was overseen by the team's former counsel, David Donovan, and not the NFL, whose 2009 personal conduct policy stipulated it must oversee probes into sexual allegations. So for the NFL not even to look over it and that to be reported this year, that is a bigger idea into, you know, why did they not do it? Did they look out for Dan? Did they turn a blind eye? That's the other side, or it could have just been simple, benign mistake, but I doubt that. Like, it had to be some intent for them not to oversee something like that. Okay, so let's go ahead and do it, and I'll be quick on mine. Scott Turner, I'm in the low range boat. I'm in like a 3, maybe even a 2. I had to watch Terry, and I had to watch DeAndre Carter, two different players, and I happened to watch De'Ami Brown just for my own sake while I had some free time. I understand what Scott Turner has been trying to do with this offense. I understand the limitations that the quarterback position provided him. It was rough. In terms of complete games, I agree with AJ in that aspect, but I do see that vertical game and them trying to attack the deeper areas of the field, the intermediate areas of the field. And also, just in terms of the passing game itself, I like how they mix up the run game with the zone and the power and stuff like that. And maybe Brian Robertson can help these guys out, but with the additions that they had this offseason, whether it's through the draft, it was through the draft. Those younger guys, I think that Carson Wentz helps out what they really want to do. So I think we'll see a better offense for sure this year. So I'm at a 3. And if you can't produce with this cast, with the skill set that you have at quarterback position, and you can't produce, then I will be genuinely surprised that, you know, next year it doesn't get turned up to like a 9 or a 10. But I don't see him going anywhere this year. Rivera, let's do a round table. A quick one. Let's just give a number out. I know AJ said like a 10 or something like that. Cole, let's get your quick number before we transition to our last topic. We'll save the other ones for training camp. But Cole, where are you at on Ron Rivera? And let's get a quick statement on why you have that number. And then we'll go around the room.
I'm going to go with 7. I like Ron Rivera as a man. I think he's a good leader, but he operates like he's the smartest guy in the room, and he has to prove it this year. Simple as that.
Dre, where you at?
I'm going to go to 6, the same thing I did with Scott Turner, basically in the middle with Ron Rivera, and the reason being is because, like I said, you have so much other things going on with this franchise, and I think this team has to really bottom out this year for Ron's job security to be in jeopardy, especially with the schedule, you know, being talked up as one of the weakest, if not the weakest schedule in the NFL. And if you don't make the playoffs with this schedule, I think you really start to get some noise to Ron Rivera's name. So I'm going to go with a 6 right now.
All right. I am going to go with a 5. I'm medium. I don't think that Rivera, to y'all's point, I don't think that Rivera is going to go anywhere this year, but it has to. You have to really bottom out. You have to win like no more than 6 games to really understand like how serious of a failure this season was for Ron Rivera, especially with, you know, the messaging that he had placed into the minds of the fan base and the media this offseason. So I'm going to go with a 5, but, you know, it may very well be worse if they bottom out, and if they get a new owner. If that new owner don't want to fuck around with Ron, you know what I'm saying? He may be out of this sooner than we think. So that'll be interesting. AJ, where you at? I mean, I know you said 10, but why 10 then?
I mean, 10, I just feel like, man, he's done so much, in my opinion, to make this team not jump over the hurdles that they had before he came in here. A lot of people want to say the culture is better. I disagree. It's the same exact shit. And I just feel like he has done a poor job in trying to resolve the quarterback situation. Even the addition of Carson Wentz just further proves that. I mean, I feel like it's a boom or bust this year for him. I can't see if he doesn't make the playoffs, how you could bring him back. I feel like if he doesn't make the playoffs, you cannot bring him back. There's no indicator why you would bring this dude back. You're going to let him pick another quarterback? Hell no.
All right. Here we go. Let's end this with a fun debate here. We're going to live in a little nostalgia for a second, but we're going to do it anyway and get up out of here. So RG3, I think he said this yesterday. Let me see. June 20th. Yeah, yesterday. So he said that this is the most dynamic Commanders offense in the last decade. Solid offensive line, playmaking tight end, explosive running back room with Antonio Gibson as the lead dog, Scary Terry, John Dotson, and Curtis Samuel leading the wide receiver room with depth behind them. Carson Wentz has a lot to work with. So he believes that this is the most dynamic Commanders offense in the last decade. This is actually dating back to 2012. So I guess in a sense, I'll rephrase the question since I just did my math. But Will Blackman and Will Compton both disagreed, and they both said 2016 was the offense, the most dynamic offense in the last decade. So let's go to 2016, 2012, and 2022. We will have to do some projecting for 2022, and I won't hold nothing against anybody for projecting in June. We can do our projections and leave it there. I won't hold anybody accountable for what happens after the season. Project all you want. Where are you all at on this conversation? 2012, 2016, or 2022, which offense are you taking? Anybody can go first too, by the way.
I'm gonna take the 2012 offense. I think they had the best player at the most important position. So to me, that one would be in its own tier. Like RG3, especially before the injury, he was on just a completely different level. You had Kyle Shanahan as the offensive coordinator. I mean, yeah, that was the best offense I've seen since I've been alive. I mean, I guess 99 was good too, but I was six, so I don't remember that much. I feel like the 2016 offense, it was a good between the 20s offense. Like they finished fifth in DVOA. I actually have that pulled up, which is higher than I thought they would. But they didn't score a lot of touchdowns. I think like as far as scoring, all their metrics were right in the middle. I think Kurt was like 13th or 14th in passing touchdowns, and like overall like touchdowns was 13th and 14th. And I was talking to somebody on Twitter, and they said maybe it was, you know, the running game wasn't, you know, that great. And they had Rob Kelly and the guy's name, Matt Jones, and Rob, you know, Chris Thompson. So that was a pretty good offense. But you know, this, I'm way higher on Carson Wentz than probably like almost like every other person at this point. I think Carson Wentz at his best can be better than Kirk Cousins, and at like I feel like their average season, there's not a ton of variance between the two. Carson Wentz has like better physical tools. So I think in that case, I think it can be like a wash. But I think the 2016 offense with just pass catchers is just kind of blows the 2022 one out the water, you know, with D-Jax and Garcon and Jordan Reed and like Vernon Davis. Jordan. I think we have some good weapons in 2022, but I mean, I don't think we can say anything definitively about Jahan Dotson or what's the guy's name, Cole Turner, or anybody like that. And Logan Thompson, Thomas, we don't even know when he's going to play. So Scott will go 2012, 2016, and then like a little bit underneath that, 2022.
All right, Dre, where you at with this one?
No, yeah, I gotta agree with Cole, and that I will take the 2012 offense over the 2016 offense. And reason being, you know, as he explained, is that the 2016 offense, I mean, yeah, you were gonna move the ball. I mean, you were gonna move, but you weren't gonna really make it count, so to speak. I mean, like you said, we had a joke back in those days that the Jay Gruden Kirk Cousins offense was a 20-20 offense. When it came to the red zone, these weren't scoring points. And that's where you kind of saw the issue when you got to that playoff game against Green Bay. Like, we didn't really have much of a chance for the Green Bay to start putting it on because we couldn't score with them. So
Deshaun Jackson just dove for that touchdown. I'm sorry.
And that brings me to another point. Deshaun Jackson and Jordan Reed, great players at their positions. I mean, anybody will tell you that Jordan Reed was a hell of a talent at the tight end position. But those guys weren't giving you full seasons back in those days. So it was like whichever one you can get available at this time, you were just happy to just have either one of them on the field. So with 2012, they didn't have the playmakers that 2016 offense had. But as Cole mentioned, they had the better, in my opinion. RG3 was a special player in 2012. I mean, he was a very special player. I mean, he's probably undoubtedly a top 10 quarterback in in 2012. And he gave you that chance as a healthy player in that season. He gave you a chance. You thought you may have been a conference championship contender at that point in time in 2012 for RG3 because he elevated everyone. And that wasn't really Kirk Cousins' thing. Kirk Cousins, he needed everything perfect around him. You know, he needed the Deshaun Jackson. He needed the Jordan Reed. He needed the Pierre Garçon. He didn't have the running back. Like, I thought Alfred Morris was the superior running back in 2012, but Kirk Cousins didn't have that. So I vote in 2012 because I legitimately thought that that was a team that could have probably went to the conference championship that year if RG3 was healthy. Now, as far as 2022, it's too early to make proclamations to say, you know, this team is this, that, or the third, because, like, we don't know what Jahan Dotson is yet. We don't even know if Terry McLaurin is going to play yet. And, you know, I do believe we have a really talented running back room, but they have to show that on the field. So as of right now, it's a wait and see, but I do like where RG3 is headed with his optimism in that he thinks this is a, you know, a dynamite offense in the Bruin. But I also like the shade that RG3 is throwing with the decade. I think he did it on purpose. He said this is the best offense in a decade because, hey, I'm not showing this dude Kirk Cousins no love. He couldn't show me no love when I ran for 75 yards against Minnesota Vikings. So so he, you know, RG3 will skip past the 2016 team, you know.
Man, I thought about this and I tried to make a case for 2016 so bad. And I can't. First off, to y'all's point, the Redskins red zone offense in 2012 was fourth best offense, red zone offense in the NFL. That alone kind of, you know, tells you the difference between that how they finished games and how they finished drives for the 2012 offense versus what they did in 2016. I should put up the numbers. I'll try to pull it up. But I'm going to say 2012, man, you had a right side of the offensive line that was questionable. But overall, a solid offensive line, a solid run-blocking offensive line. But then you had the RPO, the run-pass option, the read option, all that stuff. That helped offset the struggles in the passing game from a collective unit. Obviously, Trent Williams was around. He was holding down the left side of the offensive line. But a collective struggle was negated because of the fact that, you know, you were able to be so successful in an offense that the NFL hadn't really seen before in its efficiency. You've seen spurts of it with the Miami Dolphins, with Ronnie Brown and those type of backfields and stuff like that. But and then to a degree, I can't think of the other team after 06. It was one other team that tried to use it, but they wasn't really implemented.
The Panthers did with Cam. I think
Mike Vick, huh?
Yeah, and the Panthers did with Cam a little bit the year before.
Yeah, Cam, and then Cam for sure. I think that's a better one than the Mike Vick shit that I just spilled out. But yeah, to that degree, 2012 was just an offense that you haven't really seen before in that time. And I think for that year itself, when you're talking about how dynamic and explosive an offense can be, yes, Kirk Cousins wasn't making game-changing plays with his legs and arm the way that Robert Griffin was really keeping Washington in games on his back. and winning games for Washington. Kirk Cousins did, and it's not all on him, but in that same vein, Kirk Cousins was a person who had a lot of people he had to rely on. Like, if they weren't making plays, he wasn't necessarily winning it for the team. Like, he really counted on his big playmaker guys, and Robert can take a game into his hands and say, you know what, it's third down, it's third and long, but fuck it, I need this first down. I'm gonna go ahead and sell my body for this first down in the first quarter with 13 minutes left in the game. Like, I'm gonna do that shit. Yeah, so I think that 2012 offense was just kind of crazy, despite the fact that they only had Pierre Garçon, Alfred Morris, and
Aldrick Robinson.
Who?
Aldrick Robinson, the deep threat.
Yes, Aldrick Robinson. Yes. See, like, look, I didn't even register when you said that. So yeah, I think
that's said who? Just
dynamic. Yeah, from a coordinator standpoint and from a player standpoint, man, when you had that dog at quarterback and Alfred Morris putting up 1,600 yards in that season, man, it don't get no better than that. So I'm gonna rate it 2012. I'm gonna rate it. I'm like I said, I'm gonna do projections. So I'm gonna do 2012. I'm gonna do 2022, and I'm gonna do 2016 after that. And it sucks because Deshaun Jackson is a Hall of Famer, future Hall of Famer. Pierre Garçon is in the Hall of Very Good. But yeah, that's how I'm gonna rank it. AJ, where you at with that one?
Yeah, man, I'm gonna go with this year's offense. I'm hoping for the best. You know me. I'm hoping that us as fans of this team get to see an explosive offense. It's been a long time coming. Not about to sit here and break 2016 offense. It's something I was like waiting to see on my TV every week. You feel me? I was not waiting to see that shit on my TV. So I'm not about to sit here and act like, oh my God, it was so amazing, because it was not. at the end of the day, I'm hoping for better things for this team. I'm hoping that, you know, that they found their answer at quarterback and we kind of, you know, build out this explosive offense and compete with the big boys. Because right now we can't compete with the big boys. So
there it is. There it is. Ladies and gentlemen, Roger, take that. I see you all. I appreciate everybody who tuned in for the agenda, for the show agenda, Chopper Dive. All 32 will be live tomorrow to, you know, talk a little more macro level of NFL and stuff like that. But the fellas will be in tomorrow to talk all 32 and stuff like that. Schedule wise, after this week, we'll probably have some recorded interviews, but outside of recorded interviews and actual scheduled things like that, we won't be going live up until training camp. We're taking our little break as well. But you will see some more episodes, just depending on, you know, what time and when we can get the interviews and stuff like that. So we're not done, just taking our summer break too. So everybody, appreciate y'all for watching, man. There are some more topics. We'll touch on that, you know, when that time comes, but I appreciate everybody for watching. Appreciate everybody for listening. If you are new, or if you are listening to us on podcast platforms, you know, help us out. It has been a little minute since we got a review, man. Help us out. I know it's a ton of people listening and we need that help. Help us out. But nah, with that being said, everybody, enjoy your day, enjoy your night, whenever you're watching, whenever you're listening. Yeah.
Damn, set, huh, watch him throw the ball. We gon' pick it off. You gon' let him hit the hole or you gon' cut it off. You gon' play through fourth and long or you gon' punt it off. Your defenders have you hitters, put your pads in. Don't be looking for the ref to throw no flags in. Keep the helmet on, keep the cleats tight. You the type to want to win by any means, right? You should look alive. This is Trap or Dive.